As for the way such mixtures are prepared in these pharmacies and exactly what goes into them, well, you will understand this if I give you just one of the many pieces of information I picked up about it from one of the beings there exercising this very profession of pharmacist. The tale I am about to relate refers to the period when I had begun making frequent visits to that large community called Russia. Well, in one of the two chief cities of this large community, namely the city called Moscow, I happened to establish friendly relations with one of these professional pharmacists. This pharmacist, according to the notions on that planet, was already an elderly being. He was very kind by nature and even, so to say, obliging. He belonged to what is known as the Jewish faith. It should be added that on almost all the continents there at the present time, most of these pharmacists, why I don't know, are beings belonging to the Jewish faith. And so, whenever I visited that second chief city of Russia, I would always go to see that acquaintance of mine at his pharmacy. And in the back room, generally dignified by the name of laboratory, I used to chat with him about this and that. One day, when I went into his laboratory, I saw that he was pounding something in a mortar. And, as is customary there in such a case, I asked him what he was doing. He replied, "I am pounding burnt sugar for this prescription," and he handed me a scrap of paper bearing the usual prescription for a widely used medicine known there as Dover's powder. This powder is called Dover's because it was invented by a certain Englishman whose name was Dover, and it is chiefly used for coughs. Glancing at the prescription he handed me, I saw that sugar was no part of it, much less burnt sugar, at which I expressed my surprise and perplexity. Thereupon, with a good-natured smile, he answered me, "Of course there is no sugar in this prescription, but it does call for a certain amount of opium." And he went on to explain as follows. This Dover's powder, for some reason, is a very popular remedy among us in Russia, and is used by almost all the peoples of our immense empire. Hundreds of thousands of packets of this powder are used daily all over the country. And as you know, the opium it ought to contain is no cheap thing. If real opium were put into this powder, that alone would cost us pharmacists 6 to 8 kopecks a packet, and we have to sell it for 3 to 5 kopecks. Besides, even if one collected all the opium from the whole globe, there would not be enough for our Russia alone. And so, instead of Dr. Dover's prescription, we pharmacists have invented another formula making use of substances that are easily obtainable and affordable for everybody. That is why we prepare this powder with soda, burnt sugar, and a small quantity of quinine. All these substances are cheap. Well, it is true, quinine is a bit expensive, but after all, you see, not much of it is needed. In the whole composition of these powders, there is only about 2% of quinine. Here, I could not help interrupting him. "You don't mean it. Is it possible that no one has ever discovered that instead of Dover's powder, you are giving them this concoction?" "Of course not," laughingly replied this good acquaintance of mine. "These things can be detected only by sight and taste. And the powder we make, whichever way you turn it, and whatever microscope you examine it under, is just the color it ought to be, according to the original formula of this Dr. Dover. And as to taste, thanks chiefly to the proportion of quinine we put into it, it is absolutely impossible to distinguish it from the genuine powder made with real opium." "But what about the analysis?" I asked him. "What analysis?" he replied sarcastically, though still with a con smile. A thorough analysis of a single powder would cost so much that with this money you could not only buy half a hundredweight of this powder, but possibly open a whole pharmacy. So it is understandable that for 3 or 5 kopecks, nobody is likely to be such a fool. Strictly speaking, the kind of analysis you have in mind is never done anywhere. Each town, of course, has its own analytical chemists, and even every district has specialists of this kind in its service. But what do they amount to, and what do they know, these analytical chemists? Perhaps you are not aware of how these specialists, who occupy such responsible posts, study and what they understand. No? Then let me tell you. Take, for instance, some mama's darling, a young man with the inevitable pimples on his face, and he has pimples because his mama considered herself well brought up and thought it indecent to point out certain things to her son, so that this son of hers, whose consciousness was not yet formed, did that which was done in him. And the result of these doings, as with all such young people, appeared on his face as pimples, well known even to contemporary medicine. "Well, my esteemed doctor," the pharmacist went on. "However, my boy, before continuing further with what the kind pharmacist said, I must mention that when I became a professional physician, wherever I went, your favorites called me doctor. Some other time, I will tell you all about this title they use, because that word doctor was once the cause of a very sad misunderstanding involving our dear Ahun. But now, listen to what that amiable pharmacist went on to tell me. This young man, he said, this mama's darling with the pimpled face, studies at some university to become a specialist in analytical chemistry. And there he is required to study textbooks fabricated for the most part by learned beings from Germany. And really, my boy, these contemporary pure-blooded successors of the ancient Greeks have also developed the habit, especially during recent times, of cooking up all kinds of scientific books on all subjects. Since chemical analysis is one branch of their science, these German scientific beings have produced a mass of books in this field also. And almost all the peoples of Europe, as well as of other continents, use these books. Well, continued that kind pharmacist, this young man, having finished his university course and consequently having drawn his knowledge of the so-called composition of substances from books fabricated by German scientists, has to make the analysis of our Dover's powder. In these German books, from which he gathered his knowledge of the nature of substances, it is of course stated which elements each substance is composed of, and the formulas also are invariably quoted. These books also describe the appearance of the substances when all the required elements are present, and how their appearance changes if these elements are lacking. Several homely methods for recognizing substances are also included in these German books. For instance, by sight, by taste, by burning, as well as by certain methods that our grandmothers had heard tell of in the good old days, and so on and so forth. So then, on finishing the course, this young man receives the title of analytical chemist. And it sometimes happens that before being assigned to a responsible post, he gets practice, usually through serving for a while at a slaughterhouse, where he helps the local chemist, a former mama's darling like himself, to ascertain with the aid of a microscope in a certain way known only to themselves, whether or not the pork contains trichinae, and only later, when there is a vacancy somewhere, is he appointed to the official post of analytical chemist. Well, dear doctor, such an official analytical chemist receives our Dover's powder for analysis. On receiving it, he recognizes it as Dover's powder, either by looking at it or by tasting it, as ordinary mortals do, or because the sender has definitely stated that it is Dover's powder. For this analysis, he picks up from his table what is called the pharmaceutical guide, also composed by Germans, which every official analytical chemist is bound to have. And in the guide, he hunts up the place where the formulas of all kinds of powders are listed. As Dover's powder is known everywhere, it is, of course, also included in this book. Thereupon, our highly respected analytical chemist takes from his table a form with his official title on it and writes, "The powder submitted to us for analysis, according to all the tests, proves to be Dover's powder. Analysis shows it to contain," and he copies a formula from his German pharmaceutical guide, deliberately increasing or decreasing some of the figures, but of course only very slightly so that it won't hit you in the eye. And he does this in the first place so that everyone should know that he has not written up the results of his analysis any old way, but has really investigated the matter. And second, because after all, as the town chemist, he is an official personage and will hardly wish to make enemies in the place where he lives. The completed form is dispatched to whoever sent the Dover's powder, and the famous analytical chemist himself is quite tranquil, since no one will know that he made no analysis at all, nor can anyone check up on him, as he is the only official analytical chemist in the town. And even if one of these powders of ours should be taken to some first-rate chemist in another town, there would be no cause for alarm. Was that the only Dover's powder in the world? The packet he analyzed no longer exists, for naturally, in making the analysis, he had to destroy it. Besides, you would never find anyone who, for the sake of 3 kopecks worth of Dover's powder, would kick up a fuss. In any case, esteemed doctor, for 30 years now, I have been making these powders according to our prescriptions, and believe me, I sell them. And so far, I have never had any misunderstanding on account of these Dover's powders of ours. And there can be no misunderstanding, because Dover's powder is known everywhere, and everybody is convinced that it is excellent for coughs. All that is required of any remedy is that it should be known to be effective. As for how the remedy is made and what goes into it, what does that matter? Personally speaking, from handling these medications for many years, I have formed the definite opinion that none of the remedies known to contemporary medicine can be of any use without faith in them. And faith in a remedy arises in a person only when the remedy is well known and everybody says that it is very good for this or that illness. It's the same with this powder of ours. Once it is called Dover's powder, that is enough, because everybody knows it, and many people say that there is nothing better for coughs. Besides, speaking candidly, our new compound is much better than the real one made from the prescription of Dr. Dover himself, if only because it contains no substance injurious to the organism. For instance, according to Dr. Dover's formula, opium must enter into the composition of his powder. And you know the properties of opium. If a man takes it often enough, even in small doses, his organism soon becomes addicted to it, so that if he ever stops taking it, he suffers intensely. But with the powder made from our formula, this would never happen, since it contains neither opium nor any other substance harmful to the organism. In short, my esteemed doctor, everyone walking in the streets ought to shout from the bottom of his heart, "Long live the new formula for Dover's powder." He was about to say something more, but just then a boy brought him from the pharmacy a whole stack of prescriptions, whereupon he got up and said to me, "Excuse me, my dear doctor, I am obliged to stop our friendly chat and get busy on the preparation of these innumerable orders. By bad luck, both of my assistants are absent today. One of them, because his esteemed better half is about to bring into God's world one more mouth to feed, and the other because he must go to court for the trial of a chauffeur accused of kidnapping his daughter.